Show where we are doing our Yuan's news briefing. Today's episode 18. It is January 24th. Wow, this month is going by so fast. I've already been in Puerto Rico 3.5 weeks. It's just buzzing by. A lot of fun. All right. Hope you guys are all doing well. We're gonna talk about one main topic today, and then we'll see where we go. Of course, you can call in 347-324-3075 and press 1 when you want to ask a question. Of course, if you really want to ask a question, and if you're really calling in for the show, so hopefully we don't get the same spammers as we did yesterday. So, I, as many of you know, I read The Atlantic magazine quite a bit. It's probably my favorite magazine out there, kind of mainstream, if you will, magazine. It tends to be left of center, as almost everything is, but it also has some left of right of center writers associated with it. It's a great barometer of what's going on in the culture. I find that it has some of the better intellectuals writing in it, no matter where their political views are, and it's very reflective of what they are thinking. And since I believe that the intellectuals really shape the culture, it is really interesting and it's really informative to see what's going on in the intellectual elites, if you will, among those who are, I think, ultimately shaping the world in which we live. We'd all like to believe that it's something else shaping the world. But at the end of the day, it's our intellectuals, it's our professors at universities, it's the people who occupy, who write and speak and articulate the issues of the day. They are the people who are shaping the world, shaping the culture. And I came across this article. And the other thing I like about The Atlantic magazine is they write long-form articles. They actually write long, detailed, intensive articles. So it's the anti soundbite, it's the anti YouTube, it's the anti Facebook, it's the anti modern culture of just a sentence and at most a paragraph, 144 characters, and now it's 270 characters. I mean, these are real essays about a topic, and usually it just pisses me off because I'm opposed to much of what's written, as you'll see in the article today that I'm going to discuss. But it's interesting, it's in depth, it's challenging, you have to come up with counter arguments if you disagree. It's not just, you know, a slap in the face, it's actually an argument. And usually it's very revealing philosophically and very revealing and very informative historically. So so this article struck me because of the title. And the title of the article is Can Planet Earth Feed 10 billion people? And my first response to that, so the title again is Can Planet Earth Feed 10 billion people? So my first response to that was, oh no, not again. These idiots, you know, we've heard this argument for what, 200 and something years. Don't they get it? It's enough. Enough is enough. You know, there's plenty of food. And we've proven it over and over again that people are not starving in masses. We have more people today than ever. Why does this keep coming up? And that's when it struck me that I should really read the article, because the question is really, why does it keep coming up? And then, of course, I looked again at the title. And something else struck me about the title. And that is, wait a minute, the Earth, doesn't feed anybody. Can planet Earth feed 10 billion people? The Earth doesn't feed anybody. I mean, maybe hunter-gatherers gathered stuff, but even the hunting required human skill, human talent, human thinking, human reason. The Earth didn't just provide. Human beings have to go and take. And they can't just go and take by just, you know, what do you call it, just eating the grass or picking berries, or because, they, you know, not a lot of people can survive that way. It's very limited, a very limited resource. So by the very nature of human beings, the Earth doesn't feed any of them, never mind 10 billion people. And then I started thinking, well, maybe that's a hint. Maybe that's why they don't get it. So I really read the article, and the article's fascinating, and I highly recommend reading it. You know, you're not going to agree with any of with a lot of it, and that's fine. I rarely agree with stuff that I read. But I found it really, really interesting. So first, let's position it. The author tells the story of the 19, you know, he was, when he was had a baby, and, you know, all the excitement and all the thrill. And then as he kind of, as that all dissipated a little bit, he thought to himself, wait a minute, when my daughter is my age, almost 10 billion people will be walking the earth. How is that going to work? How are they all going to be fed? And, you know, he admits, he says, you know, this isn't the first time people have thought this. We've thought this many times before. So he acknowledges. He talks about the fact that, you know, over the last 30 years, hundreds of millions of people in Asia, Latin America, Africa have been lifting, have lifted themselves, which is even better, from destitute into something like the middle class. They've enriched themselves. And, you know, he says nothing like this has ever happened before. Nothing like what's happened over the last 30 years has ever happened before. Then he says, and this is, again, kind of a clue to what he's thinking or what he's not thinking. He says, still nothing like the surge of well-being has ever happened before. True. But then he goes on and says, no one knows whether the rise can continue or whether our current affluence can be sustained. No one knows. No one knows. Why does no one know? That's the key question. Why does no one know? And how do we know that the earth can feed 10 million people, 10 billion people? Right? Yeah, I mean, the author of the article, somebody makes a note, Charles Mann, is an interesting character. And he should know better because he's an expert on Julian Simon, the great economist. If you haven't read Julian Simon, The Ultimate Resource, I definitely encourage you to do so. One of the great economists of the 20th century, died probably, I don't know, it's probably now 10 years ago. Julian Simon really deals with this problem and solves it. He solves it. And he tells you why we do know the rise can continue if you understand where the rise comes from. So Charles Mann continues, and he says, you know, how do we know? What do we do? And he presents it as, looks at two schools of thought here. And this is what gets really interesting, because this is stuff I didn't know. There's one guy by the name of William Voigt. William Voigt was born in 1902 and was what is called an apocalyptic environmentalist. Now, I didn't know William Voigt, and I haven't studied the environmentalist movement in great depth, but it's really interesting. He believed that unless humankind drastically reduced consumption and limited its population, it would ravage global ecosystems and die out. And he says if we continue taking more than the earth can give, as if the earth gives us anything, but we'll get to that, the unavoidable result would be devastation on a global scale. Cut back was his mantra. So William Voigt was the idea was typified the conventional environmentalist attitude. Human beings, unless they become more integrated and a part of nature and understand nature, and they shrink their population and really revert down back to a primitive way of life, it's unsustainable. We're all going to die. All going to die. He positions Borlaug, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, because this guy's a really heroic guy, Norman Borlaug, who he says is emblematic of what he calls the techno-optimists. Techno-optimists. The view, and this is the view, that science and technology properly applied will let us produce out of any predicament. And, of course, if you know the history, Borlaug is to a large extent responsible for what's called the Green Revolution in the 1960s, discovery, invention, creation of high-yielding crops, all kind of varieties of high-yielding crops that actually generated a huge increase in yield of food and the ability for mankind to actually not starve, right? The ability of food to be grown in quantities unimaginable beforehand. And according to Borlaug, only by getting richer and more knowledgeable can humankind create the science that will resolve our environmental dilemmas. Innovate, innovate is the cry, right? So here's the two cries. And this is, again, good writing, right? He's positioning it, the villain, or not, in his word, it's not the villain. It's two perspectives on the world, right? Cut back, cut back, cut back versus innovate, innovate, innovate. Those are the two cries. Now, both men viewed themselves as scientists. Both men viewed themselves as people, as forward-looking, as people engaged in trying to predict the future. And both, now, so far, Voigt is clearly wrong. So far, there has not been mass starvation. And indeed, to the contrary, we've only had more and more and more food. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show. This is my news briefing, and we'll be right back after this.
Looking for inspiration? Follow us on Instagram at AynRandOrg and get your daily dose of inspiring quotes, stories on how Ayn Rand fans connect in remote places, as well as updates on our popular student programs and upcoming events. You'll also see which celebrities are reading Rand and posting about it. Follow us today at AynRandOrg, AynRandOrg, the official Instagram feed of the Ayn Rand Institute. See you there.
All right, we're back. So here we are. We position it as we've got these people who claim, oh, no, 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 the Earth can only produce so much, and anything you do, including all the innovations, and part of the argument is, all the Green Revolution has done is postponed the doom, but the doom is coming. Millions of people are going to die. We cannot sustain 10 billion people. You know, all those fertilizers we've invented, they're destroying the environment. All those new crops are actually destructive to the environment. The environment is going to bite us back. We are going to be destroyed. Cut back, cut back, cut back. Shrink those populations. Stop growing, stop innovating. And it's interesting. He calls those people the prophets, like the prophets of doom. But this is where I think you really get an indication of kind of the culture's problem. I mean, the author's problem, but the author here is very, very reflective of the culture in which we live in. What does he call the innovators, the people who believe that innovation can solve all problems, the Julian Simons of the world, the Borlaug, how do I pronounce this up? Borlaug, the Borlaugs of the world. What does he call them? He calls them the wizards. And he positions the whole article. And the article goes on for pages and pages and pages. Definitely worth reading. I highly recommend it. Because part of what he does during this article is he presents all the new innovations that are, that people are working on today. Not all of them, a lot of them. And I guess this is based on a book that's coming out. But the innovations that people are working on today to dramatically increase the food supply even more than where it is today. And the article goes into great detail about that, and I found it fascinating. A lot of stuff that I didn't know about. It's called The Wizard and the Prophet. That's the book. So the book is incredible. And then he also shows how the wizards are working in kind of natural, organic solutions to the world's problems. And they all have this moonshot, this big project that's going to solve all their particular problems. And he presents it in a even-handed way, although you get a sense that he is more oriented towards the prophets than the wizards. He believes more in the prophets. He's worried about environmental degradation that's going to kill us all. And he's worried about his daughter's ability or his daughter's generation ability to have enough food when they reach middle age. So it's fascinating. You'll learn a lot about the environmentalist movement. But more importantly, you'll learn about some of the innovation that is going on today that is going to provide the food in the future. But what struck me about this is the title and the term wizards. And this identification I had when I first read this, as you go through the article, you see more and more and more of it. And then it struck me that this is very similar to what I see among many libertarians, among many technologists in Silicon Valley. And this is, there are two sides of this. So, but what unifies all of this is a misunderstanding, or an ignorance, a complete blanking out of where innovation comes from, of where food actually comes from, and where innovations come from. It's wizardry. It's wizardry. It's magic. It just happens. And this is why he says, well, it's been an amazing ride for the last 30 years. Wow, all these people are better off. All these people are richer. All these people are alive, even though many environmentalists predicted they would all die. But how do we know it'll continue? We've discovered all these amazing things, and we've innovated, and we've improved our lives. But how do we know we can do it again? How do we know things will get better? It's manna from heaven. It just arrives. And I've read a lot of at some point I did do research on the environmentalist movement a few years ago and about the history of the environmentalist movement for a talk that I gave. It's available on the Ayn Rand bookstore on cultural movements and how cultures change. And one of the things I noticed when I was reading the books written by environmentalists is they had the same approach. Oh, there's this problem. I don't know. We can't use carbon fuels because the earth is warming. So we'll just innovate. We'll just you know, fix it. We'll get solar panels or we'll get wind turbines. It'll just happen. There's the attitude that is prevalent, I think, in our culture, that innovation is magic, that science just happens, that it's all, somebody wrote, abracadabra, and it just comes. But we don't know that it's going to come, because that's the problem with magic. Because you don't understand it, it might come, it might not. So it came over the last 30 years. We had this magic. Will it come again? Will it come in the future? How do we know it'll come in the future? And at the end of the day, how do we know that planet Earth can feed 10 billion people? Oh, wait a minute, but the planet doesn't feed 10 billion people. Who feeds 10 billion people? People do. Innovators do. Science does. Technology does. Entrepreneurs do. But all of that is a black box. It's unknown. What is that? Where does it come from? How do we know it exists tomorrow? It's scary. Man, It's scary if you don't know where innovation comes from. If you don't know where food comes from, then the world is a scary place. So while I think many environmentalists are truly motivated by nihilism, by wanting to exterminate the human race, by destroying, by just knocking stuff down, I don't think all environmentalists are. I think those are the real intellectuals. Those are the intellectuals behind that. I think most people are motivated by fear. I think the human race generally is to a large extent motivated by fear. I hate to bring this up, but you saw this in the last election. The whole election of Donald Trump was an election motivated by fear. And Donald Trump played on that. He knows. He understands human psychology. He understands the crucial role that fear plays. Now, why are people afraid? Is there a legitimate reason to be afraid? There is. If you're blind, if you're walking around and you don't understand the world around you, if you don't understand where innovation comes from, if you don't understand where food comes from, planet Earth is feeding us. Really? And will it continue to feed us? I don't know. Where does food come from? Where does innovation come from? How did all these poor people suddenly get rich? How did that happen? Where does that come from? Where does success come from? Where do some people fail? Where do some people succeed? What is it that they're blind to? What is indeed the source of success? What is the source of food? What is the source of innovation? What is it that they're afraid? I mean, they're afraid because they don't understand. They're afraid because they don't know. They're afraid because they're blind to what? Where does innovation come from? Where does food come from? What makes it possible for 10 billion people to have food? It's reason. It's human reason. For 200 years, it's not that they're afraid of reason. It's that they have negated reason. What does a life without reason mean? What is a life that doesn't recognize the existence of reason means? I mean, here is an intelligent author. An author who's read Julian Simon, who's written about him, one of the great economists of the 20th century, who's read Norman Borlaug, who understands the value that Norman Borlaug has given humanity. And he doesn't understand where it comes from. He doesn't understand what it's from. Because we've negated the concept of reason. And what does that mean if we negate the concept of reason? It means we've blinded ourselves. We've destroyed our senses. We don't have a mind. And in other words, we are walking around the world blind, with no senses, with no mind, without the ability to integrate, without the ability to see, but with more importantly, without the ability to understand what is going on. And how do we solve problems? It can't be reason. Reason's out. Kant threw out reason. Reason's gone. So once you abandon reason, what you have are prophets and wizards. What you have are mystics. The prophets are mystics who their revelation is negative and they see the world being destroyed and bad things happening. And the wizards are mystics that wave magic wands and create new technologies. But how do I know which of these mystics is right? What's the standard by which I can evaluate which mystic is right? How do I know what revealed knowledge is true? Is the guy waving the magic wand better than the guy who's prophesizing the future? When you negate reason, you turn people into blind, afraid animals. And what you get is the environmentalist movement that I don't think purposefully, because I don't think most people in the environmentalist movement are haters, but a movement dedicated to destroying mankind. A movement dedicated to destroying progress, destroying industrialization, destroying innovation, destroying technology, because they're blind. They don't see. They can't see anything. It is so, you know, there's nothing more important to human existence, to our ability to thrive and succeed as human beings, is a respect for facts, a respect for reality, a respect for our senses, a respect for the mind, a respect for our rational capacity, a respect for reason. When that goes, we are blind, afraid animals. Nothing more than that. And blind, afraid animals are not going to do the right thing. Blind, afraid animals, you know, can't comprehend the logic of an argument. And they can't understand how the world became a better place over the last 30 years. And why it should become a better place in the next 30 years. Or what are the principles? There are no principles. To figure out the principles, to figure out cause and effect, you have to have a respect for reason. So Kant is the destroyer of the world, just as Ayn Rand said he was, by in a sense making reason impotent, as Kant did. And then Hegel, who said, oh, well, contradictions is just part of reality. Contradictions are everywhere. Contradictions are the very nature of reality. Well, then logic is out, because logic is about, you know, undoing contradictions, discovering why contradictions don't exist. And logic is out, and reason is out, and reality is out, and the law of causality is out, and the law of identity is out, and you're finished. This is about epistemology. This is about metaphysics. This is about the world that Immanuel Kant and the German Romantics created and the postmoderns have picked up on. And even decent people, and this guy writing this article seems to me like a decent person. He generally has respect for the innovators. He just doesn't understand where it comes from. So he can't trust that it will happen again. And of course, I'm not even asking to take the next step. The next step, which is to say, well, what's necessary for innovation? The reason why 30 million people came out of poverty over the last 30 years, over a billion people, 2 billion people came out of poverty over the last 30 years, is because reason was freed up from oppression. That is political freedom. So what we need is to respect reason, and then we need to free it up. We need to unloosen the shackles, unburden it from the chains, unburden it from authority and coercion. And when you do that, yeah, life could be better. Life could be a lot better than it is today. And that's not speculation. That is absolute certainty. And the planet can sustain probably 20 billion people. There's no limit to how many people can be sustained on the planet. And if that's too many people, we'll go to Mars, or we'll go to asteroids, or who knows where we'll go. There's no limit to humans' ability to innovate once you understand the role of reason. Once you understand the role of human thinking, once you understand what freedom unleashes, it unleashes the thinking mind. And hell, when you have 10 billion people, that's 10 billion thinking minds. How cool is that? How many innovations will we have then? We only have like 7 billion thinking minds today, and half of them are not even thinking because they're not free. Half of them are not thinking because they've been convinced by, well, not half, but, you know, half of Americans are not thinking because they've been convinced by Kant in one of his variations, whether through religion or through postmodernism, not to think. So if you understand that it is man's mind, it is reason that feeds us, and if you understand how efficacious man's mind is, then the future, granted freedom, You never worry. You're not afraid. I'm not afraid. Right? Almost, you can't. Once you understand the capacity of human beings, then fear goes out the window. Once you understand that all the false predictions of the environmentalists of the last 80, 90, 100 years, they've all been false predictions. Once you understand why they've been false, the logic saying because they underestimate the human mind, they underestimate reason, then you have to be optimistic, rationally optimistic, positive about the world. So the destroyer of the modern world is the attack on reason. What's destroying the modern world is unthinking, non-thinking, the negation of thinking, the rejection of rationality. That is what is destroying the world we live in. And that is why the political situation today is so destructive. It's so destructive because nobody is approaching it rationally. Nobody's presenting rational ideas. Rational ideas are out. What's in is dogma. What's in is emotion. What's in is the tribe. And that's what happens when you abandon reason. The tribe is in, and the prophets are in. But I found it really interesting. Years ago, respects technology, and it calls technologists wizards. Wow. All right, after the break, we're going to take a quick break now. After the break, I'm going to take your phone calls, 347-324-3075, and you have to press 1 so that I know you're calling to actually ask a question. So questions on this, on any topic, if you want, we'll dedicate the next few minutes to topics of your choice, 347-324-3075. Press 1, and we're going to go to a break.
The Ayn Rand Archives has more than 1,500 photographs of Ayn Rand, her life, and her work. Become an ARI monthly sustainer today, and you are eligible to receive the Ayn Rand photo series every month. These high-quality reproductions, each with historical anecdotes provided by the archives, will be shipped to you in a protective sleeve and are suitable for framing or for collecting in a photo album. Becoming an ARI monthly sustainer is the most convenient way to contribute. Your automated monthly gift of just $25, that's less than $1 per day, helps to sustain our vital program and qualifies you to receive the Ayn Rand photo series. When your first monthly contribution is made, you'll receive the first set of 2 photos. Then for as long as you contribute at least $25 a month, you'll receive an additional set of 2 photos each month. For residents outside of the United States, a monthly donation of $50 is required to receive the photo series. Signing up is quick and easy. Just go to aynrand.org/donate and look for the link at the bottom of the page to become an ARI sustainer.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Ron Brooks Show. This is our news briefing, although, I'm kind of bored with the news, so we're doing a little bit more in-depth stuff. I again encourage everybody to read this article. I think it's an excellent article. It's fascinating. Can Planet Earth Feed 10 Billion People by Charles Mann? It's in the Atlantic magazine. You can get it online. And what's tragic about this is that Charles Mann is trying to really deal with the facts. He's trying to really present a story. And you can tell his admiration towards science and technology. But he's crippled. He's crippled like so many of modern intellectuals, so many modern people. He's crippled by his lack of understanding of what human reason is and what human reason is capable of. Okay, we've got 4 callers. Hopefully they're real callers. We will find out in a minute. I'm ready to hang up on you if you're not a real caller. And we'll see if the question's on this or something else. We'll take it from there. Hi, you're on the Ron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Aloha, it's Stuart.
Aloha, Stuart. How's it going?
Going great. I want to ask you about a related topic because I've been following this techno-optimist, rational optimist stuff for a while now, and I think that a lot of environmentalists and leftists have half conceded Julian Simon's point that there is no inherent limit to growth. Like Pierre Diamandis, you know, the SpaceX guy who admires Ayn Rand, he wrote a book similar to Julian Simon's called Abundance, And it was recommended by Bill Clinton, it was recommended by Arianna Huffington. And back in Julian Simon's time, hardly anyone would stand with him. You know, everyone left and right was against him. So
yeah,
I think
yeah, go ahead.
So and like at Vox Media, you see all these articles saying there is no inherent limit to growth, and they cite Max Roser from Our World and Data, who has all these charts showing things are getting better. They cite Steven Pinker. But what worries me is that they concede that the whole Malthusian doomsday thing is wrong. So they say, yes, we do have wealth. But then they say, it wasn't the free market that did this. It wasn't because people were free. It was tax funding.
Yep.
Such as like the Breakthrough Institute, environmentalists at the Breakthrough Institute say, you know, fracking is good. Fracking even reduces CO2 emissions. But then they combed through the history of the R&D done in fracking, and they found instances where someone got tax funding. So then they try to attribute all tax, all fracking, all the innovation to those instances of tax funding, you know?
So they're completing forces on the left. There certainly is one school of thought that is focused around abundance and really focused around Silicon Valley. That is, yeah, there's no limits to human growth. Of course, then they have to get into the robotics and the AI are going to destroy human beings. So they can be completely optimistic. Their malevolence comes through one way or the other. But then there's another school of thought that definitely exists on the left and is very powerful on the left and was particularly prevalent during the Obama administration, which is those economists who believe that we've reached now secular stagnation and there'll never be economic growth. And this is just the way it is. And economic growth is peaked. And there was an economist, a famous economist by the name of something Gordon, I forget his name, who put out a very influential book two or three years ago about the limits of growth and growth has ended. In either case, in both cases, it's all about government. So if we're heading towards abundance, the cause is government, the cause is central planning. And because we're ultimately going to land up in a world full of robots and no need for human beings, we need a universal basic income to cure that of. Or if there are limits to growth and growth is not going anywhere, then we need a universal basic income because a lot of people are just not going to cope because the growth is not going to be sustainable in order to feed all these people who are going to come about, and we're going to have to do much more redistribution of wealth and things like that. So either way, we need bigger government and we need more government involvement, and we need to you know, constrain human entrepreneurship. So, and leave it more and more up to government. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's all based on this fallacy that growth comes from the spirits, that we don't understand it, that we don't know what causes it. And either it's Diamantis, where it just has to happen, this exponential growth is baked into human genes and it just has to happen, or whether it's others who say, no, we've peaked innovation, and it's all based on nothing. It's all based on emotion. It's all based on irrational optimism on the one side and irrational pessimism on the other side. But it's based on irrationality, and that's, you're seeing it on both sides.
You know, Max Roser especially breaks my heart. He has all this data, you know, showing this progress. But anytime you ask him what caused it, he always tries to attribute it to the welfare state. That's even the exact term he uses, welfare state.
They can't understand what caused it, because they can't understand reason. They won't admit to the existence of reason. Everything is still, to them, some form of revelation. And if stuff is revelation, then you need a philosopher to do the revealing to you. It's not up to the individual. Individual reason is not the source. All right. Thanks, Stuart. Thanks for calling. Absolutely. Thanks for bringing in Diamantis. I mean, it's very, very, you see it. It's not about politics. This is about people's attitudes towards thinking, towards reality, and towards fact, and understanding the source of innovation, and understanding the origins of progress and success. They're rooted in reason, and therefore individualism, and therefore capitalism. And you cannot have them without all those. All right, we're going to take the next caller. Hi, you're on the Ron Book Show. Who's this?
Hello?
Hello?
Yep, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Hi,
yes,
Dr.
I
Brooke.
Can.
I'm glad to be talking with you. Sorry I missed the first part of your show. I was actually just getting off of work. I actually hope to be working for you one day, BH Equity Research. But anyways, I like what you were having to say, and mainly what I wanted to talk about was I also think the world does need more people, not less. And it's something I've discussed with, you know, a lot of people who are concerned about carbon emissions and everything for more humans, where I think that it's actually the opposite argument, where the world would do better with more humans because we'd have more chance of innovation and, you know, a genius being born just by chances of, you know, being born. And then
I also think that
we couldn't sustain our lifestyle with less people. So I was wondering what you thought about that.
I agree with you, although I'll put this caveat. I want more people who are free. That is, if they're going to be many, many more people, but we're not going to be free, then we're going to land up in concentration camps. We're going to land up in horrible conditions. Because there will be too many people, and people will starve. There won't be enough food because you need freedom in order to – so, you know, who feeds 10 billion people?
Right.
It's the human mind. But it's the human mind freed from coercion, freed from authority, freed from oppression. So you need freedom on top of it. So absolutely agree with you. Under freedom, the more the better. The more people, the more brains, the more problem solvers, the more innovators, the better off we all are.
I 100% agree. Do you mind if I have a quick follow-up? Just a yes or no would be fine if you want. Do you believe in any of the depopulation theories that you hear where it's like for example, where Bill Gates was on the TED Talks and he was saying we need to get carbon emission down to zero?
No, I don't think Bill Gates wants to depopulate the Earth. I mean, I don't think he would force that. I don't think he's that kind of evil. I think he would theoretically like there to be fewer people in the planet because he believes in this environmental nonsense and this profit attitude that this article talked about, and he doesn't understand the source of wealth and prosperity and the source of his own success. So I think, you know, Bill Gates is a very mixed guy, but he's not evil in the sense that he wants to see the Earth be depopulated. I don't believe that.
Thanks, Dr. Brooke.
All right. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. All right. We're going to go to next. Hi, you're on the Ron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Jennifer from Michigan.
Hey, Jennifer. How's it going?
Fine, how are you?
I'm fine. Very good.
I was wondering, do you think it's a good example of a package deal where the environmentalists will carbon dioxide, which is a bio-necessity, in with true pollution, you know, something like sulfur dioxide or pollution that can be an actual problem?
Yeah, I think that the package deal, well, is it a package deal? I mean, pollution has become a package deal because they include in it stuff that is not objectively a pollutant, but
right.
I don't know. Let me think about that. I'm not sure I would call it a package deal, but clearly, viewing CO2 as a pollutant is, you know, ridiculous. It's anti-scientific and really absurd, just absurd.
Yeah, there wouldn't be any life without it. And there is legitimate pollution, but that's not part of it.
Yes, no, and the real legitimate pollution is far less than what people argue it is. You know, the fact is life expectancy is longer than it's ever been. We live better, healthier, lives in spite of all the cars, in spite of all the so-called pollution, in spite of everything. Being rich is in a polluted environment is far better than being poor in a pristine, natural environment. So I'm all for pollution. I'm a huge advocate for pollution. Now, if I'm rich and there's an easy and relatively cheap way to make the air clean, I'm all for that as well. So it's not that I'm really for dirtying the water and dirtying the air, but the idea that that is killing us and it's destroying the world and ask the Chinese, they've got a lot of pollution, but life is relatively good because they're wealthier for it.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to worry about cleanliness when you're not starving.
Yes, and it's cleanliness is a prerogative of the rich, and I hope we all get rich so we all get cleaner and cleaner. So I'm all for cleaning up real pollution once you get rich. once you get rich.
Right.
All right, Jennifer,
okay.
Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. And thanks for the support. All right, hi, yeah. You're on the run. Who's this?
This is Russell Jones. Hello again, Mr. Brook.
Hey, Russell.
You might have mentioned this, but I was wondering what your take was on what Steve Mnuchin said at Davos, where he advocates a weak dollar, because I think, you know, that right, our failing economy is what dropped America out of the top 10 for innovation, because I was just reading about that recently.
Yeah, America is now for the first time out of the top 10 innovative countries in the world, which is stunning. It's really, really stunning. And the other thing that I read about, I think today, was that China has just cloned a monkey. And China's way ahead of us now on genetic engineering. The other, I was going to talk about it tomorrow, and we'll talk about it tomorrow, is about the story about how the Chinese are using CRISPR to do gene editing way ahead of the United States on this stuff because of all the problems that regulations have created. But look, so in spite of the fact, I talked yesterday about the evil of regulation. And regulation is really hampering innovation in America. But let's separate that from the weak dollar. I mean, the weak dollar is a consequence of the fact that people are afraid of a trade war. It's a consequence of the fact that in spite of interest rates going up, which should symbolize a strong dollar, people are afraid of the fact that there's still huge cash reserves on the bank's balance sheets that they could deploy. And people are sensitive to the fact that Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin want to weaken the dollar so that they can increase exports and decrease imports. Now, a weak dollar policy is an absolute disaster. It is horrible. It is ridiculous. It is stupid. It creates economic problems. It creates an economic, it has the potential to create economic disaster. For the last time I remember a Secretary of the Treasury saying explicitly they want a weak dollar was in October 1987. And the reaction to it was a 25% decline in the Dow Industrial Averages in one day, the largest one-day decline in the Dow Industrials ever. Now, I'm not saying that'll happen right now, but it certainly happened in 87. But the weak dollar policy of the Trump administration is bad for the U.S. economy. It's suicidal, and it goes hand in hand with the suicidal nature of the anti-trade agenda. Mnuchin is a lefty. He's part of the swamp. You know, he's not a good guy. You know, he's a crony. He's pro-regulation, he's pro-government control, he's pro-central planning, pro-central banking. One of the worst appointments that Trump made, but very reflective of who Trump really is.
Right.
Yeah, so bad news. The fact that Mnuchin said it is bad news. I would be very cautious in the financial markets right now. And by the way, the dollar could decline so much that it will wipe out a lot of the gains in the stock market that everybody raves about. If the dollars gold is going up right now, which suggests again that the dollar is declining not only against other currencies, but there's real inflation against the cost of living. And if that is representative of inflation, or that represented the value of the currency you have, then what does it mean when the stock market goes up 10% if the dollar declines by 10%? It means nothing. So
right.
I think the bad economic policy or the bad economic policies and the bad communication policies, communicating economic policies of the Trump administration will come home to roost. We will suffer a consequence of that. And a weak dollar is indicative of bad economic policies and bad things to come.
All right. Oh, man.
Good.
It's going to be rough. Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
It is going to be rough. I don't know when. I don't know how exactly, but it's going to be rough. And Donald Trump is not making stuff better. He's making stuff a lot, lot worse. A lot, lot worse. All right. Let's see. We got one more caller. Hi, you're on the Ron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Hello, this is Henrik.
Hi. Yes, hi.
Hi. Go ahead. So it sounds to me like what I gather is that intellectuals are basically dishonest, that they're pretending to know something that they don't know about the future, that it's they're taking a static view of the present and projecting it into the future of what the future can be. Even when it comes to robots and AI, there's a lack of imagination of the diversity of AI, diversity of robots, of what could be created.
But I think that the dishonesty comes from the rejection or the denial or the blindness towards what reason is and what it's capable of. And therefore, a kind of a real wandering in the dark. So if you will, many of our intellectuals have been blinded. They've been blinded by the fact that they've negated reason, and therefore they have no tool by which to know reality, by which to project the future, by which to understand how human innovation is going to happen, what's going to cause it. They either believe innovation is automatic, it'll just happen because it's magic, but magic seems to happen and will continue. I hear a lot of libertarians and a lot of kind of optimists about the future have this attitude. Things are going to be great in the future. Why? Because they've been great in the past, and it just happens. And then the pessimists are the same thing. Oh, no, we don't know that things are going to be good in the future because we don't really understand why they were good in the past. So how do we know it'll happen in the future? So both are wrong in the same respect. Until you understand the role of reason in human prosperity, until you understand the role of reason in human flourishing, in technological success, in economic success, in providing us with food, you're blind to the future, whether you're on the left, whether you're right, whether you're pessimist, whether you're optimist, you're blind to the future. So you're absolutely right. The real dishonesty is a dishonesty with regard to human reason and the capacities of human reason.
Yeah. At the same time, they claim to be for reason in contradiction to conservative religionists. But they don't.
It's divorced from reality. So it's a Kantian form of reason, which is a unconnected to reality. Reason is as a mind game, as a logical exercise in stuff, but it's not connected to real reality. We don't know what reality really is. Our senses distort reality. Our consciousness distorts reality. So at the end of the day, it's impotent. So yes, they acknowledge reason and they claim to be champions of reason, but a form of reason that is impotent, and they know it's impotent, so it undermines whatever case they have. And that's the
okay,
evil
thank
of
you.
Kant. That's what Kant did.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thanks to all the callers. Those of you who are asking, do I read the chat comments? I try to follow along, but it's hard. So if you have a question, call. I don't know what you're shy about. It's easy. It's a local phone call. I'm not asking you to call some foreign country, although I am in Puerto Rico. This is it's a 347-324-3075. It's a local number. You can easily call it. So instead of asking questions on chat, which I can't really integrate while I'm talking, while I'm taking calls, while I'm trying to focus, and then you know, I'm trying to follow along the chat to make sure that I'm not going off on some tangent that nobody understands. But I can't really acknowledge your questions, and then, you know, you ask a question, I think, oh, I should answer that, but then it passes because other people are writing and there's a whole conversation going, too distracting. All right, I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. I want to talk about CRISP. I want to talk about some other interesting things that are happening. Maybe we'll talk again about Davos. I know Trump is going to Davos, and there's a lot going on in Davos, and Davos is interesting. I also plan to do a show maybe on Friday about George Soros. I want to do a show about George Soros and conspiracy theories. And then we'll also have a show soon about honesty, the virtue of honesty. Why? It's so crucial, why it's selfish to be honest. All right. I'm always here on Facebook, on YouTube, on Blog Talk Radio. Please subscribe to my podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on any podcasting app you like. And follow me on Facebook or Twitter. Subscribe, please, to my YouTube channel. And finally, if you get value out of the show, if you want to support the show, if you think what you're getting here is of value and worth supporting, please go to patreon.com, Yaron Brooks Show, patreon.com, and make a contribution. Anything from $2 to any amount imaginable, $2 a month. All of this helps me do the show, increase the professionalism of the show, which you will start seeing changes. And you, I don't know if you've seen, but a couple of short videos have been released. One is on my Facebook page. I think you'll really enjoy it, out of the debate at Yale. And another one is on YouTube, from a talk I gave in South Korea. Both short videos that we produced recently. These are the kind of short videos we're going to be producing more and more of as your funding gets realized in more and more and more marketing efforts to promote the ideas on this show, which I hope are your ideas. Help me, help all of us change the world. All right, you're listening to Yaron Brooks Show. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.